will be locked. The east room is where the
Velocity people met yesterday.
The bus will leave promptly at 11:30.
There will be no...
It'll be there at
11:15. In Missouri, they don't mean about... This is the show-me state. Show me your body at 11:30 or we ain't going.
That's right. If you're not there, there's no excuses. If you're not there at 11:30, you ain't going.
If you don't believe me, just listen to Elton. I mean, you can do it more emphatically. Those of you who requested energy contracts, you can put in your order with Jan, and they will be immediately sent to you, probably via telephone to the home office and back to you before you know it. All right, let's get started here. We've got only three up at the desk. If anybody missed their ticket, Jan will still be there after the meeting, and you can get them between 11 and the 11:15 when you start walking to the bus. I want to acknowledge some things here. For free help in the Midwest and for very inexpensive Midwest seminars, Paul Caldwell, who's a teaching member, he hasn't said much, but he also serves, who sits in the wings. He and Bob Cochran, who you all know, do seminars every month in Chicago, and they have a hotline, a phone line for you to call them with your problems in the Midwest, so long as it is in the Midwest. Otherwise, the man who plays all tracks and understands all equally as well, Jim Bradshaw, dial a hat in Tulsa. By appointment, you can get me in through Jay in the office. Take advantage of the fact that Elton, Paul Caldwell, here, stand up, will you, Paul, so everybody know you're a silent hero. He and Bob Cochran in the Midwest, Jimmy Bradshaw in the Midwest, and Elton Smith will hold small group meetings. And Elton doesn't charge anything because if you put him in any more money, the government would put him into an even higher bracket, if there is one. Speaking of money, how many of you win races but don't win any money? And how many are lying about that? I mean, for the first year and a half, I was coming home to my wife bragging all the time. Well, honey, I'm 11 out of 20, now 12 out of 20, now I'm up to 13 out of 20. Where's the money, darling? Well, it's, you know, you don't do this for the money. You do this, it's a challenge, and you have to win first. Well, she got a little tired of that about after a year and a half, so I came up with a theme that, believe me, it will either make you or break you. Every time you go to the races, win or lose, give your wife a $100 bill. Okay, if your budget says that you can't give her a $100 bill because that's about all you make, it'll start with 50. But you should be able to give your wife, now you don't have to do it if you go every day, make it every third day, give her a $100 bill, but give her something. And if the same thing with women, don't give your husband money. It'll break up your marriage. But give him something else. Tender, loving care or something. Show that just because you're more successful in this field than he is, that you still need him and still love him. Men's egos are far more delicate than women's. Now, with the same number of winners you all have, you can actually make up to 10 times what you're making by simple money management properly applied. I know this because Dick Schmidt, watching him at my side, frequently getting fewer winners than I get at a given track on a given day, goes home with about three times as much profit as I do. So he made it a little amusing for you the other night, and I'm sure he won't hesitate to be amusing this morning if he still has any left. But the amusing part should not take precedence over the seriousness of the fact that you now have a tool to win, and he'll give you now the tool to win money. Dick Schmidt. You must have done good. You get applause.
I'm gonna work the crowd out here.
Which one of these has the longest tail?
I guess this one is the one I was using before.
Hello.
Everybody here. Everyone in the back. Good.
Okay, I'm all set. We're ready to roll.
Practice. Joe, I just unplugged you something.
Joe?
Thanks. I'll take care of it.
All right. The main mic is still working, so that's good. How many of you were paying attention Friday night when we talked about goal setting? And how many of you did it? Did you all write them down? If you didn't, you probably ought to ask yourself, why not? Because, I mean, it's not very strenuous, and most people, when they don't want to do something, they immediately forget it. So if your answer with "gee, I forgot about doing that" is, maybe that's just an avoidance technique. So how many of you is, my goal is to turn at least semi-professional and make X dollars? For how many of you does that fit your goal? Something like that. Most of you. Did anybody else come up with a completely different goal? Yes, sir.
I set my goal as to my last year of income.
No. If a goal has a dollar sign in it, you're...
Well, I'm not going to say the dollar sign. No,
okay.
I sound like I'm bragging, but I have it in my head.
That's all right. In other words, your goal is to X dollars.
My
that's
last
fine.
Year, 1989, of what I earned is what I'm looking forward to.
All right, that's the same goal then. Anybody come up with a goal that doesn't have a dollar sign in it? Yes, sir.
63%.
Okay.
ROI, you mean?
That's just a win percentage. That's fine. That's a good enough goal. Yes, sir.
Double your money every 20 races. Your bank. Double your bank every 20 races.
Why?
It's a good target.
No, that's not a good target. Let's say that it takes you 40 races to double your bank. Are you a success?
Yes,
you're a damn good success. But I don't think that's rethink that goal, because you're saying I have to do something that may not be realistic. Put it in dollar signs. Okay, let's say you double your bank. What does that do for you? That doesn't rethink it a little bit, because doubling your bank doesn't have much impact on your life.
It depends on the mutuals they're paying to.
Yeah. Too much is outside of your control on that one. Just rethink that one. I put dollar signs in that kind of goal. Anybody have a goal that doesn't involve money? Anybody else? Well, mercenary group. There's nothing wrong with dollar signs. That's how you keep score in this game. And what I want you to do is take that goal, I ask you to write it down, put it in your pocket, and then listen to what I'm about to give you with the goal always in mind. Because if your goal were to open a shoe store and make a comfortable living for the next 40 years, sell the store and retire to Arizona, you'd have some sort of a business plan. If your goal was to, do almost anything, you'd have... Well, I'm going to kill myself up here.
You don't expect a lot of sympathy.
Yeah. your goal would be, if your goal were anything to do with making a living, you'd have some sort of a plan. Here's the plan. A plan, and it's a good one, and until you try it and find that you really hate it and come up with something better, I would recommend it to you. It's a plan that I use and have. I'm 2 days shy of 4 years as a full-time professional. I have been making my living for 4 years, on a $200 bankroll using this plan until you come up with something better. I recommend it to you. Most of you will hate this. Most of you will not do it. I've given this plan now, I think, to, I would guess, around 600 people. To date, four people have told me. One came up and told me this time. Four people have told me that they've done it, implemented it, and that it's working for them. Those are pretty poor odds. Pretty poor return on time invested. But I know that that's just sort of human nature. No matter what money management plan I was giving you, I don't think my return would be much better unless my money management plan was that exact as in every race and don't keep score. That's the plan most of you are using, isn't it? Okay. Keep your goals in mind and listen with sort of an open mind. Some of the things I'm going to tell you are a little unpleasant. But if you open that shoe store, some of the things that they would tell you at a shoe store seminar would be a little unpleasant. They'd say unpleasant things like IRS records, inventory control, things that aren't much fun. You might just think, oh, I'll open a shoe store. I'll get some shoes. I'll go out. I'll sit. I'll massage the lady's feet. We'll have a ball. That's not running a shoe store. Running the shoe store is all the dull stuff in the back. Running a shoe store is a job. And I would hope that those of you who have goals of professionalism, goals with dollar signs in them, will listen up here and start treating racing as a profession. Because don't forget, you've all set a goal to become at least semi-professional. If you like your job, that's fine. Keep it. Some of us in Perco keep our jobs. Some of us don't. Some of us love our job. Bert Main, for instance. He's a minister. He has a calling. He's not going to give that up for racing. He doesn't want to be a professional. But he's in a profession that he still hasn't cracked the official government poverty line yet. If it weren't for racing, he'd be in real trouble financially. So he uses racing to achieve his goal, which is to minister to his flock. And that's perfectly legitimate. My goal is to be a professional and earn X dollars. The X is your business. You know how to set your goal. You know what you need. But if you pay attention, we can show you how to do it. How many of you know about value-based handicapping? It's a hot time. Well, maybe it's not as hot back here. You know where you only bet on the overlays? Horse A is 4-1. Horse B is 5-1. Horse C is 6-1. Horse D is 3-2 or whatever. You'd make these odds up in advance, and then you bet on all the ones that are higher.
Dick Mitchell.
Yeah. Mark Kramer talks about it. It's quite a popular topic. At least it is on the West Coast. Maybe it hasn't made it back here.
Hope not.
Good. On the surface, it makes such elegant sense. If you only bet overlays, you're almost bound to make a profit. If a horse is worth 4-1 and he's paying 9-1, you should obviously bet on it because he's worth 4-1 and you're getting 9-1. Over the long run, you will make a tidy profit there. Every once in a while, I'm called on to address groups outside of the certain methodology, and it's a lot of fun because it's such a different mindset. It really is. I get it kind of opens my eyes. You people compared to the normal handicapper, are pretty serious students. You're willing to sit still for an entire weekend without any racing, for one thing. Most seminars aren't run that way. I have a good friend, used to live in Los Angeles, named Mark Kramer. He's the editor of Gambling Times. You may be familiar with him. He's also written a couple pretty good books. He had a class at Los Angeles City College in handicapping. I took that class once, got involved in handicapping because of it. And over the years, he would invite me back to speak to the troops and tell them a little bit, eventually, about the SART methodology as I became proficient in it. And the last time I did this, I walked into the class, fat, dumb, and happy, not knowing what was going on. I didn't know that they had just had Dick Mitchell and Barry Meadow and, of course, Mark himself in there. And they were pretty much sold on the concept that the professional way, the only way to play the races, was by building a morning line. Create your own morning line and then bet the overlay. Well, I walked in, and one of the first questions I got was, you build a morning line with a SART methodology? And I said, no, I don't do that. And the guy who asked the question said, sort of with a sneer, well, you can't be very good, or words to that effect. Now, I happen to be a gentle soul. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah. Always get to laugh.
Yeah. I take names. I would never, for instance, embarrass a person in front of a class. But I made an exception in his case. And I pointed out to him that there might be more than one way to win, more than one way to do it. And we had a little conversation about it. And the basis is, and I want to just touch on this because I'm going to spend a little more time on the actual money management stuff today. How do the morning line people make their decisions? When you hear someone like Mitchell or Kramer talking, particularly Mitchell, he acts like this morning line that he creates is a real thing. This horse is 4-1. No, it isn't. You know how they make that morning line? They guess. How do you make decisions? You guess. Is this horse a contender? You guess. What makes a professional, what makes an expert, is that his guesses are right more than yours. But that's really the basis of it. So don't start feeling bad that you're not doing some of the scientific money management stuff. In the class, Mark Kramer's class, I showed them. I wrote a big number on the board. I wrote 70 up there. I said, that's the reason I don't have a morning line. That's the reason I don't use one. That 70 is my win percentage. I use 70, betting two horses, of course, and insisting on 3-2 on my entry. How many of you have a little trouble with that two-horse thing? Show of hands. Come on. Yeah. Look at the back of the room's brave. Up here. Yeah, yeah. How many of you really want to bet one horse a race? Now, of those of you who insist on only betting one horse a race, how many of you refuse to ever bet an entry? Nobody. Almost every handicapper loves an entry. Entries are traditionally overbet because you get two horses for the price of one. Well, that's what we're doing, except instead of letting El Stupo, the trainer, put together your entry for you, you put it together. You say, this horse and that horse, they look good to me. I'll bet them as an entry. And that's all you're doing. You're betting an entry. You take the odds on this one, the odds on that one, you average them together, you do a little dutching perhaps. split it 60-40, and you have an entry. You make a profit no matter which end with, just like a regular entry. If my entry pays 3 to 2, that's my bottom line, a 50-cent return on every dollar wagered, if the entry wins, and my entries win 70% of the time, that shows me, over a period of time, a 5% return on investment. Now, I wouldn't walk across the street for a 5% return on investment, to tell you the truth, but that's the bottom line. That's a $6 average mutual. Remember, we've got a $4 investment. No one can drive a $6 average mutual consistently. It's just too low. Once in a while, a bigger price is going to sneak in on you. So my actual return on investment is quite a bit higher. The last time I calculated it, it was 48%. That'll drive a very nice living for you for the rest of your life. One of the problems with the gentleman in the back who set a 63% win proficiency, Howard set that. And over the years, I think we've kind of overemphasized it. Win proficiency is not important. It doesn't matter what your win proficiency is if you're profitable. Going back to my friend Mark Kramer, his win proficiency is between 15 and 20% betting one horse. His average mutual has exceeded $25 for long periods of time. He's a long shot player. He was most profitable, when I talked to him at Expo, he had just come off a very profitable series at Laurel, where his win percentage was in the neighborhood of around 8%. And yet he had made quite a bit of money. Because his average mutual, now he was playing maiden trifectas. Lots of first time starts. But his average mutual was approaching $100. So it can be done. But a lot of this is up here. If you can handle the losing streaks that Mark Kramer can handle, I tell the story that we went to the races together, and he had doped. He had one of his garage horses running. He keeps all his old forms out in the garage, and sometimes when some races have fallen off the bottom of the form, you know, they're 12 back, 15 back, he goes out to the garage and digs around out there and looks up its past performances, way back. And he had a garage horse that just fit. And we went out there, I don't remember what I put on the horse, $20 or something, Mark touted me on it.